in. Right now is an extremely exciting time to be buying these types of assets because of the opportunity that's here. And we finally have the leverage to be able to go in here and steal some deals. We've always been very tough and strong negotiators and stuck to our numbers on the acquisition side because we believe in making money the day that we buy it because of how we buy it versus hoping for something in the future.
Are you ready to transform your life? This is a no-nonsense show helping immigrants like you create generational wealth, even while working full-time. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Saket Jain.
Welcome back, my Great to Us listeners. Today, we're going to be talking to Alex Kaufman, co-founder of TR3 Capital. They have a massive portfolio across multiple different asset classes. They have single family portfolio. They have multifamily, mobile homes. He's actually a perfect guy to talk to because as you are, if you're not living under the rock, as you're looking at the outside news, what media has been telling us that real estate is ready for a correction. Everything is going to get depressed before everything is going to go up. There's so much data and so much noise that we're hearing. We talk about bringing an expert like Alex. We'll actually get it firsthand because he's in the thick of it, like a lot of other guests that we have. And we'll get one more perspective from Alex. Alex, thank you for joining the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Alex, before we launch the show here, we'd love to understand, when you hear the term migrate to wealth, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it means a few things, you know. I think that a lot of society and just people in general maybe don't think about wealth and what that means too much. And I think that a lot of people kind of, you know, live in the same thing that they do every single day. And a lot of people really don't prepare for the future. And so when I hear migrate to wealth, I think of, you know, migrating to a different way of life and migrating to, you know, almost like a true purpose.
Love that, man. Alex, tell us your paths to migration to wealth. What has that path has been?
Sure. So I've always been fascinated with the idea of wealth ever since I was a little kid. I remember, you know, even when I was probably 5-6 years old, I was talking to my grandparents about stocks and dividends and investments and things of that nature. So I've always been fascinated with wealth. When I was younger, I went down the wrong path in life. Basically, from like 11 till 21 years old, I was under the influence of drugs and alcohol every single day. And I thought that I was going to become wealthy by selling drugs. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really work out that way. And by the time I was 21 years old, I was a full-blown heroin addict, you know, in and out of jail for drug possession charges. And that's really where my migration to true wealth came from and started, you know. When I was 21 years old and I had nothing and all of my friends were graduating from college and, you know, doing well in their lives, I basically had to start my life over. And thankfully I did, you know. It started with, you know, forming a relationship with God and working on my spiritual health. Shortly after that, I started working on my physical health and eating healthy and exercising. And when I focused on those things, as well as, you know, my mental health, that was honestly the greatest wealth that I had experienced up to that point. You know, money and all these things really didn't mean a whole lot. And at the end of the day, so long as I have my spiritual health, my physical health, my mental health, it really doesn't matter where I'm at or what I'm doing. You know, I would consider myself wealthy and happy. But, you know, once I kind of turned my life around and got on the right path is when I started to look at what I could do to start building financial wealth legally and looking for legal businesses to start, and did a few things, but ultimately landed on real estate, which has proved to be, in my experience, the best investment that, you know, I could have made and have made financially.
Great, great. Alex, and thank you for sharing your story, man. I really appreciate it. To the extent possible, we're going to go back to that time where I think you were saying you were around 21-ish, where you had the realization that you need to turn your life around. Could you tell us what was going on at that time? Like what specifically triggered it? Because I'm sure there were people telling you even before, but something must have happened that basically broke the camel's back.
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't one specific thing. I mean, my life was not, I was not doing well, you know, and I was miserable and I wasn't headed anywhere. But ultimately, so I didn't want to continue to use drugs, you know. You get you get caught in this cycle, this never-ending cycle of wanting to get sober, making promises to yourself and to everyone around you that you're going to get sober. This is how you're going to get sober. You're going to do these things. And without a true solution in place, this cycle just continues and you fall back into what you were doing. And so I really just, for the longest period of time, I had no real solution to getting well and to getting sober. But it wasn't like one specific instance of something that happened to me. I mean,
yeah.
I've been through a lot of stuff. You know, I've almost been killed. I've been shot at. None of those external consequences were the thing that, you know, really drove me to get well. It was more of an internal discomfort and internal knowledge that, you know, I knew that I was meant for bigger and better things. But ultimately, you know, one of those last days that I was using, you know, I just knew that I was either going to die or end up in prison for the rest of my life. And I didn't want those things to happen. And so ultimately, you know, that's really what it was, is just either figure out a way to get sober and change my life, die, or go to prison for the rest of my life.
So let's go back to that, because I think there's while not everyone may be having that extreme moment in their life, but everyone's trapped into some habit pattern. It could be either your health, could be a relationship. There's a lot of toxicity, and usually it's self-inflicted, because I'm a firm believer that you're suffering because of what you're feeling inside, and external people or situations is only accentuating that. So until you heal from inside, the outside is not really going to change for you anyways, because any situation, you may find misery. So when you look at that, and people are trying to lose weight, right? People are trying to do certain things with their relationships, be more present with their family, or whatever their addiction is, and I'm calling that as a metaphorical addiction, I'll look at myself, I have been overweight throughout my life. And I go into that same pattern. I'm like, you know what, this year it's going to be different. I'm going to do this, this, and that. I'm going to eat very healthy, and this is my plan, and all that good stuff. And then I realize within 5 days that motivation dies down, right? And then the momentum needs to be carried with something very different. And I've treated that as my inspiration to say that, you know what, I want to be healthy for my kids. But that only goes too far. It's all a mental game. So I'm trying to figure that out, that can we draw some inspiration from your story, where you had done such a... Because when we talk about drugs, and I've never had them, so I can't really explain that concept that well, but it seemed like your physical addiction, it's not just emotional. Emotional could be there. But emotionally, even if you're in a separate, your body pulls you back, or could pull you back. So that's to overcome such a strong addiction. Is there anything we could draw for, or you may have for people like me, who are making excuses, now I don't have the time for that, or I'll do it tomorrow. One day is not going to hurt anything. Let me just have one more piece of cake, or whatever that is. Any thoughts on that, Alex? And I don't even know if the question is making sense. Maybe I'm talking too abstract.
Yeah, you're asking like what was the motivation, or how did
you keep going? Because you said that there have been solutions in the past, there have been promises in the past, and you've not been able to fulfill it. But what was this time? Was it, the solutions are similar, I'm assuming. There's not a whole lot of different solutions. But something pushed you towards committing to it. It could be a support system. It could be something internally changed. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a really good question. Just for myself, it was the spiritual solution. So, you know, prior to that moment, I had tried all those things, and they never lasted, you know. They didn't hold enough weight for me to continue to utilize those as a solution. And ultimately, drugs and alcohol were my solution to things. You know, they made me feel a certain way inside. They you know, quieted the noise. They solved certain problems for me, which is why I continued to use. However, at a certain point, like you were talking about the physical dependency, at a certain point, the drugs stop working. You stop feeling the effects of the drugs. And so you either, you know, A, have to start using more drugs to continue to get the same effect, but they stop working after a while. So therefore, your solution that you used to use to, you know, to deal with whatever, you know, how you felt inside, it stops working. And so what did work, and I really wanted to get sober. You know, I did not, I don't think anybody who's using drugs today who you know, who has gone way off the deep end and is way past recreational use, those people do not want to continue to ruin their lives. I guarantee it. You know, neither did I. And I wanted to get well. I wanted to change. I wanted to live a better life. And so that was, you know, part of it. But I needed something to replace what was my solution, which was drugs and alcohol. And that solution was God. And so there's a saying that for people who have gotten sober is, you know, that alcohol had knocked us into a state of reasonableness. There became a point where the drugs and the alcohol and the life that I was living just beat me up so badly. And I beat myself up. You know, I did this to myself, that I became open and willing to have a spiritual relationship with God. And it's that, you know, remained the constant of getting sober, is continuing to develop that relationship with God, continuing to build on that spiritual relationship. And ultimately, that relationship with God now providing things that the drugs and alcohol used to, plus much more. And so without that, though, like if I was just relying on myself or friends or job or relationship or something of this world, it never held enough weight to keep me going. And it wasn't like, you know, this thing where I wake up every day and I'm like, I'm going to stay sober today, and I'm going to, you know, avoid driving past the liquor store, or I'm going to not watch these things or listen to this music because it might tempt me or whatever. You know, there's no, after a certain point of forming that relationship with God, there's no battle to stay sober anymore. And God provided that solution for me.
It's beautiful. Alex, thank you again, and congratulations, man. I know it's probably a hard journey, and I'm so sorry if I brought you back to that time. I just want to make sure that we can draw some inspiration from that. So thank you about that, Alex. Alex, so let's talk about the journey next from that, right? So you're now sober. You found God. You found your true calling of being in the top position for your physical, mental, spiritual health. When you were thinking about financial health, financial well-being, you said you started multiple businesses. You were thinking of multiple businesses. How did you land in real estate? Can you tell us about that journey?
Yeah. So I tried a few things. You know, I had invested some money in the stock market. Ultimately, I was just gambling.
Yeah.
And did okay on some, did not okay on others. I had started a business with a partner of mine in the substance abuse industry, where we were doing interventions and we would do peer recovery support coaching and we would do transports for treatment centers and such. And that was a good business. And I really enjoyed helping people in that business. But in that industry, you have to, if you're operating a business and you want that business to be profitable, you have to make decisions on helping people who are able to pay for the services. Mm-hmm. I'm a businessman and I like making money and I like having profitable businesses and these businesses being successful. But at the same time, I also, you know, within that realm, I also like volunteering and helping people and not charging money for everything that I do there. So my morals were in constant conflict with, on a business side, only being able to help people who could pay for the services. So I ended up deciding not to continue that. Around that time where we were doing that, me and my current partner, Matt, had invested in a few properties together. And I was just really fascinated with real estate. You know, he was my partner, Matt. He had already been a broker. He had a property management company. He had real estate investments. And so ultimately, it was Matt who drew me into real estate. And after doing so and seeing the benefits and seeing, you know, how easily you could structure deals and create wealth through real estate is when I decided to go all in on real estate.
And Alex, how did you meet Matt?
Matt and I have known each other for probably 22 years. I grew up with Matt's younger brother, Sam. He was my best friend growing up.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Because it's always good to understand where you find them in a mastermind. Did you guys interact? So it's always good to understand where people's paths cross. But these people are always already in your life. So that's always a good thing. Because there's an inherent trust there. So now, Matt, help us understand that journey. And you've been in that and real estate investing world for how many years now?
Since 2017.
You guys have built a great portfolio. help us understand, instead of, you know, a lot of the businesses, even within real estate, they want to go say, I'm only going to do real apartment investing, or I'm only going to do single family, I'm only going to do turnkey, I'm only going to do mobile, or whatever, pick your asset class. There's very few operators, more specifically, who are spread across multiple sub-asset classes. So when you guys were thinking about your business, how did that growth happen? Did you start everything at one shot? Did you start doing multi-single family? Then the story was, it's going to take too much to scale, let's jump on multifamily. I started doing multifamily, then found mobile home. Tell me that story. How did you find these asset classes, or they found you?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And the way we operate today is not the, of course, the same way we, you know, operated doing deals in 2017. So there's been a big journey of learning and learning how to scale and learning how to be disciplined and things like that. But the way that it started was, you know, we didn't have a bunch of money. You know, we didn't have investors at that time. We weren't raising capital. Right. It was me and Matt. And we had, you know, as much money as we made in our other businesses to invest. And so we just were here in Austin, and we were very plugged into the residential real estate market with agents, property management, brokerage, wholesalers. So we had a lot of deals being sent to us that were single family, 2 to 4 units, things like that. And so naturally, that's a lot of what we purchased initially. And the way that we would look at it was not, you know, we're only doing this one thing, this asset class, et cetera. You know, we're deal guys. And so we like good deals. And initially what we would do is we would, you know, just buy the best deals that we found, whether it was single family, 2 to 4 units, mobile home park. So we were just scraping up whatever good deals we could get. And I mean, we look at thousands and thousands and thousands of deals and only buy, you know, a few of them. So that's how it started, was just buying good deals here in Austin. And I think we got, you know, really lucky to have started at that time, because a lot of the deals that we bought, or at least for myself, a lot of the deals that we bought just appreciated insane amounts. You know,
Austin 2017 was a perfect market, man. Now, yeah, you know, like every market, who knows in today's market where is a good market, but definitely 2017 was a great time. The time was in your favor.
Yeah. And I mean, it worked perfectly. So a lot of the deals that we did buy, you know, have appreciated tremendously. But over time, you know, we have gotten a lot more disciplined. And like today, you know, if this was 2020 again, where values were appreciating 42% year over year, we'd be buying a lot of single family houses, but it's not. And especially in a market like Austin, It's very hard, almost impossible to cash flow on single family, 2 to 4 units, most multifamily. You're not going to get any cash flow, especially with today's debt. So what we're focused on right now is multifamily, like 32 units plus, strip malls. We just closed on a strip mall 2 days ago in Florida, and then RV, mobile home park, and also we're looking at some industrial. So if I saw, which we do see a lot, you know, if we see some single family homes or 2 to 4 units coming across our desk today, we're likely not going to buy it and hold on to it. What we will do is wholesale it, do something like that. We may buy it and then flip it. But right now, not really looking to buy any single family homes to keep as rentals.
Perfect. So, Alex, let's jump into what's happening in the market right now, because we touched base. The market is very different than it was in 2017. And I would say for the last 10 years, the market is very different than the market we're seeing right now. And there's a lot of angst built into the market right now. No one's certain what's happening. Capital markets are in turmoil. It's a very foggy market, right? You can only see so far right now. And you can't make sensible predictions going forward. You can make predictions, but they may not be sensible. So how are you guys looking at the market? What are you feeling as you're definitely in the acquisition phase even now, which is great. How are you looking at these markets? Why Florida? Why strip mall? Why are we looking at these things?
Yeah. So even though you can't predict the future, you can look at actual numbers. And so right now, commercial real estate owners, if they need to sell, they're in a bad spot. Interest rates are much higher. Cap rates are much higher. And debt, you know, the cost of debt, they can't just refinance out. And if their loans are maturing, or if they need to sell, they're going to need to sell prices that are or deeply discounted from where they were 2 years ago. That is why we're focusing on strip malls, retail, industrial, multifamily. Number one, we would only buy it if the numbers made sense today with debt that we'd get today. So even in worst case scenario, we know that we are cash flowing. We underwrite everything pretty conservatively, and we make sure that we're going to make money today.
Yeah.
I also know that the likelihood of interest rates lowering is pretty good. And also once interest rates lower, that cap rates are also going to lower. And so what we're looking to do is find properties that, like this strip mall, for example, really great property. It's 10,000 square foot, 9 tenants, all good tenants. It's in a smaller market north of Pensacola, Florida, and Pace, Florida. But what's really great about this property is it works day one. Mm-hmm. So current NOI is about $135,000. Our debt on it is going to be about $95,000.
Enough cushion built in there.
Plenty of cushion in there. We bought it for $1.45 million, put down about $350,000. So immediately it's already over a 10% cash on cash return. But the beautiful thing about this property is that fortunately the seller had all of these tenants on annual leases. Now that's not a great thing, because the banks don't really like that. And it's also a little, uncertainty for us as investors. But what it did allow us to do is come in and renew these tenants at much higher rates and also push back the triple net expenses that they're not currently paying for. So within the first 6 to 12 months of owning this, our NOI will jump from 135 to about 185 after we renew the leases, which we've already got the LOI signed. Tenants want to stay there.
Two, DSCR of almost two. It's amazing.
Yep, that. And then we're also, so cash flow is going to increase tremendously, but we're also going to instantly, by doing that, by simply just going to the tenants and saying, hey, you're now at market rent, we created, almost $1 million worth of value in the property.
Yeah.
$850,000 or so, simply by doing that. And so, we're also going to add some improvements to the property. We're going to redo the landscaping. We have to replace the roof. We're going to paint the building, get some new signage up, and make this a better, business park for the tenants and their businesses. But those are the types of deals that we're looking for, is deals that work today based on today's mm-hmm. numbers, being able to go in there, add value to the property simply by, lowering expenses, raising the rents, passing back triple net expenses to the tenants, and create, a significant amount of equity very fast.
Alex,
and so we can
go ahead. Finish it up. Sorry.
So we're doing that with, retail. We're looking at industrial. We don't own any industrial, but I believe that we have the ability to do the same thing there. Same with multifamily, RV and mobile home.
So help me understand that, Alex. So you were from multifamily guy and all of a sudden you jump into the strip mall, and that too very far from where you are, because you're in Austin, I believe. And I'm assuming your partner Matt is also in Austin?
Yeah.
So how did that jump happen from Austin to Florida? Because that's not an easy jump, right? Kind of like, especially when you're operating the deal, you're going to be away from it and a new asset class, which you may not necessarily, one could argue, do you understand how to manage it or not? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know that. So help me understand that. How did you bridge that gap?
Sure. So the seller actually reached out to us. We have pretty good SEO on our website, and the seller found us, sell my commercial property fast for cash or whatever. Gave us a call, sent us all the deal info. And one of the things that attracted me to, because prior to this, we actually weren't really looking at retail too much. But like I mentioned, over years of owning a bunch of single family, 2 to 4, small commercial, it's especially in a market like Austin, where there's not much cash flow, especially in a downturn in the market where properties aren't appreciating that much, I've just gotten real sick and tired of, buying a lot of properties that don't cash flow.
True.
And so the retail really attracted me, the triple net tenants, not having many expenses and being able to add that much value and get cash flow is what, ultimately drove me to saying we should focus a lot more on retail. So the seller found us, analyzed the deal. Like I said, it's a great deal. We have a partner on a fund that we have and also on this deal. His name is Jason, and he is the vice president of retail leasing for Amley. Amley builds, apartment complexes, mixed use, retail in like downtown Austin, nicest of the nicest buildings. And so Jason has a ton of experience in retail. He also owns, in Walgreens and shopping centers and things of that nature. So having Jason as a partner to steal, tremendously to get, you know, better tenants in, oversee the local management company that we have operating the deal. But, you know, even if we didn't have Jason and we didn't know Jason, the deal is good enough, you know, that it's not too complicated.
No, it's a screaming deal, and I'm glad that you guys, because just even if you don't do anything to it, you're still, there's at least a 60K spread there, right? Which is amazing. Not 60K, maybe 40, 50K spread there, which is enough cushion to continue to add value. And even if you didn't do anything, your debt's going to be serviced unless somebody starts to leave, which I'm sure you have measures in place to replace the tenants. So I have actually just looking at the numbers you tell me, it's worth getting deeper into it, which is great. So thank you for sharing that, Alex. Alex, beyond that, as you're talking to your investors on what's happening in the market, what's kind of going with them? What kind of fear are they? In the fear mode, they're in the opportunistic mode, they're sitting on the sidelines. What's going on with them?
Yeah, it's a good question. The consensus that we're getting from the investors that we're working with is opportunistic. You know, they're excited. We're not hearing a whole bunch of fear, and fear doesn't really exist around us very long, you know? So we're very opportunistic, and right now is an extremely exciting time to be buying these types of assets because of the opportunity that's here. And we finally have the leverage to be able to go in here and steal some deals. I mean, we've been buying real estate, you know, for the last 7 years. And up until interest rates started rising, we had zero leverage. You know, everybody was offering, you know, over asking for these properties, overpaying for deals. And we were the guys who were coming in and offering, you know, 20% less than the list price. And so we've always been very tough and strong negotiators and stuck to our numbers on the acquisition side, because we believe in making money the day that we buy it because of how we buy it versus hoping for something in the future.
Correct.
And so finally, for the first time ever, you know, since I've been buying real estate, we actually have the opportunity to steal some deals, and we have the leverage as buyers. So the investors who are with us and see us doing this and do things with us, you know, are of the same mindset and want to get in on these opportunities with us.
Great, Alex. Alex, this is great, man. In the interest of the time, Alex, shifting towards the next segment of our show, I'm going to ask you about three questions. The first question really is, I'm sure you have a very thoughtful and long answer to that. What's one insight you can share with a 20-year-old Alex somewhere who's tuning into the show?
One insight, the 20-year-old Alex who has the same mindset that I do, is I would tell that person to continue forward and don't allow anyone or anything or society or all these things that are around you that are trying to tell you what to do. Don't listen to any of them and just continue to follow your heart and your path of what you want to accomplish, because it will work out.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful. Thank you, Alex. Next question, Alex, as you reflect back on your life and talking to the people around you, where do you feel there's a gap in humanity right now? Where should humanity migrate towards?
Gap in humanity. Expand on that just a little bit more.
Yeah, kind of like where you see, you know, people are divisive, or you see people are judging each other, or more at the human level. Where do you feel humanity as a whole is lacking right now?
It's a really good question. And I'm not sure, because I try and I try and stay disengaged from humanity as a whole. But one thing that I feel people really struggle with is the need to be accepted by others. And I feel that people's actions and the way that people operate ultimately seems to be not for themselves, but so that someone can view them a certain way. Mm-hmm. And one of the most freeing things that, you know, I've ever experienced is when I did form that relationship with God and started, you know, building on that spiritual relationship, my desire or, you know, my need for other people's opinions of me started to disappear. And so when I stopped caring about what anyone or anything thought about me, because I found out who I was and I knew who I was, and I was very true to myself, and the only two opinions that matter are God's opinion of me and my opinion of me, then I stopped living life for other people and I started to live life for myself. And so, I don't know, I feel like that's a big gap that a lot of people experience.
Alex, I want to go back to a comment you made, and I want to go back to it. You said, and if I heard you correctly, maybe I misheard you, that you stay pretty disengaged with humanity. What does that mean to you? That's an interesting way. I've never heard anybody say that. So I would love to love for you to expand on that.
Yeah, the reason I said that is I don't really like being around a lot of people. You know, I like being by myself, being with my family, and being with a really, you know, tight, close-knit group of people. And outside of that, I really don't get involved with what other people are doing. And so that's kind of what I meant when I said that, is I'm probably a little out of touch with humanity because I choose not to, you know, be involved with everybody. And so that's kind of what I meant is.
And is that a conscious effort?
Yes, very much so.
Can we go a little bit deeper on that? I know we're coming towards the end of it, but it's a very interesting piece. I want to expound on that if you have time permitting.
Why
is that intentional?
Kind of going back to what I was just talking about knowing who I am and not really needing, you know, I don't really get satisfaction out of engaging with a lot of people. You know, I have everything that I need right here. I enjoy, I guess a lot of it has to do with, I feel as if I don't want a whole bunch of surface level relationships and conversations. Right. And I very much appreciate intimate and deep, close relationships with people that I want to have those relationships with. And so I think that that's where a lot of it comes from is I've got everything that, you know, I need emotionally and, you know, here with my close group of people. And I wish everybody
I think that was the answer I was looking for, man, because it seemed like that's really what it is. It's like a lot of people are engaging with a lot of different people just because they're not fulfilled. And it's not about the quantity. For some it may be, but for most it's about the quality, right? If you can get satisfied with one or two people in your lives much at a much deeper level, and the conversations and the relationship and the uplifting that you're going to do for each other, then being surrounded by 1,000 people who are there just as a transaction. So I feel the same way. I just wanted to hear your perspective on that. So I completely understand. Thank you for going deeper on that with me. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Alex, is there anything that we didn't cover in the last 30, 40 minutes that you wish that you wanted to share with people that's going to add more value to them?
No, I think I would reiterate I would drive in, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about this last half, though, is that the best thing that I ever did was form a relationship with God. And then in that process, become disconnected to the need of things from people and of this world. And that is what has provided true wealth and happiness to me, because it doesn't matter. I mean, all these things could go away today. The entire real estate portfolio could burn down. The businesses could shut down. But so long as I have that, I've got everything that I need.
Beautiful, Alex. Thank you again for sharing. Alex, where can people find you and learn more about the work that you're doing?
You can find us by going to trecommunity.com, type your real estate all over the social media channels, and the Real Alex Kaufman on social as well.
I like that. Real Alex Kaufman. I like that.
Alex Kaufman taken.
Yeah, I know, man. It's so many of these are taken, right? My social media handle is The Sakage, and I hate it. I'm like, I don't want to be the, but that's the only one that was available that I could think of. I'm lazy too. But thank you again, Alex. Appreciate it, buddy. And for our listeners, hopefully you got a lot of value out of the show, not just about finances, not just about investing, not just about real estate as an asset, but really investing heavy in other aspects of your life as well. You may be lost. You may be feeling lost. You may be feeling judged. You may be feeling that you need other people's acceptance. But really, the conversation that we had with Alex was a very raw conversation, and I appreciate Alex for that, because that should give you, if you thought your life was hard, there's somebody else who has harder than you in other aspects. And I'm not comparing in terms of comparison, but everyone's fighting their own battles. The battles are different, but everyone's fighting. Everyone's a fighter. So if you're feeling that you're trying to be ready to give up or anything in life, especially your dreams, just reflect back. Listen to this podcast. Close your eyes and reflect if you were in Alex's shoe and the journey that you are, he is where he is today, 9-10 years back, I don't think he could even imagine being that journey. He just wanted something different. But he has built a beautiful life for himself, for his family, for his friends. He's adding a lot of value, right? So there's always a beauty in struggle. It's just that, unfortunately, the struggle is hard. And God, I mean, only God knows why we're going through struggles, because they want, I'm assuming, that's my own thesis behind it, that it's because they want, God wants us to improve. I know it's easier said than done, but stay with the struggle. Don't give up hope, and connect with us. If there's anything, Alex or I or other folks, other guests that I've brought on, if they can help, jump on it. I'm sure they would love to hear from you. Well, with that note, thank you again for tuning in. This show is not going to be possible without your most valuable resource, which is your time. And I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Socket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.